I've never heard a person walk out of the stadium and say, wow, I wish that game would have included more waiting.
He is an endless source of baseball and hockey knowledge.
Jose Berrios, el lanzador de Puerto Rico en el Clásico Mundial de Béisbol.
John Morosi, every week with Wyman and Bob.
You're being serious with me right now?
We are always serious, and we always love talking to John Morosi right now. 5 o'clock on Thursdays when you usually hear him. He is with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. JP, how are you today?
Mike and Dave, I am outstanding. A bit of a unique last 24 hours for me. We were supposed to do the broadcast in New York last night on MLB Network. We got word, of course, of the postponement related to the air quality, and so being a Midwesterner, I made the executive decision that I was not going to wait around and see what the flight patterns would be and if the air traffic would continue to be grounded in the New York area during today. So I said, gentlemen, I'm getting on the road and I'm driving west.
Wow.
I'll get to Michigan. So good day of driving, good night of driving. I actually stopped around halfway, State College, PA yesterday. So I got a chance to just spend the night there in State College and then got on the road. And I'm home in Michigan now with, as I said to my producer, Another chapter for the book. The last 24 hours certainly a tough bit of just life for everybody right now, to be honest, especially if you're in the Northeast and the eastern part of Canada. And so, just baseball games are far secondary to the larger global question of the environment and climate and everything going on. So we're just hoping everybody stays safe and that we can safely go outside and play our games here in the coming days.
Were you up here for the playoff game with the smoke up here?
I was. Yes, I was.
Wow,
I was.
Smoke follows beauty, I guess.
Yeah, I appreciate that sentiment, but it's my goodness. And I think, too, it was a surreal day, and a couple thoughts. Number one, first and foremost, there were a lot of kids and just listening to the radio in New York as I was driving around, stuck in traffic. What are we doing? Or do we have a game or not? And just the number of kids that had, you know, outdoor graduations or their outdoor field days that you always look forward to this time of year. And of course, you know, kids in school have had so many things that they've lost the last few years because of the pandemic. So that was the part, honestly, that my heart went out to them, just being a father myself, thinking about, you know, darn it, more stuff the kids have to miss. But, but to your point, I remember that game, and that was I think it was even worse yesterday in New York than
really?
It was from an,
wow.
Like when you walked outside, if you've ever been in the middle of around a bonfire that's going, and it's the kind of smell that you can taste, if that makes sense, where it just kind of hits you in the sensories, like, whoa, what's going on here? It was like that for 24 straight hours there. And so that was it was uncomfortable. And I think, to be honest, and we could certainly move from the environmental discussion at some point back onto the sports, but the reality is, I think the reason why MLB took a while to decide the situation yesterday about the game in Philly and the game in New York is that, and certainly you recall this well, late in 2020, there was the game, the Mariner game that was postponed, and then a full series that was moved to San Francisco because of the air quality in the Pacific Northwest. And so I think baseball, MLB, is mindful of the fact that this is sadly not a one-off situation. That was the one thing I kept saying to people yesterday. We cannot use the phrase, well, unique, never seen before situation, never to be seen again. That's just not true. I mean, we all, you see it and you realize the drier, hotter temperatures that we're living through because of climate change. We've got to deal with this, unfortunately. And so I think it's just a reminder and a question sort of existentially, well, when does climate change impact our little corner of the world that we call sports? And it was 3 years ago in Seattle. It was last night for us in New York. And I think it's a reminder of every day that we can play our games to be grateful for that. And also that we need we have to take care of some larger business as a people to take care of our globe and our planet.
All right, John, speaking of existential questions.
Yes.
The Mariners.
Yes.
What, in your opinion, has to happen for them to find some consistency in the lineup?
You know, Mike, I've been thinking about this today, and I heard what Jerry DePoto said earlier on to Brock and Salk about this, and for me, it's exactly what Jerry said, the lack of power. And it's now at a point of the year where and I understand what he's saying about hoping and believing, really, that when you look at the underlying numbers, that the strikeout rates and the walk rates are pretty similar to what they've been in the past, but the power rates are not. We are rapidly approaching the point of the season where you got to start making some decisions. And I know Jerry loves to make aggressive deadline deals, and probably that's part of his disposition again. But I think that the way they're performing and the lack of consistency gives me a lot of pause as to what sort of deals he could contemplate. And I do think there are probably a handful of players on this team that are obviously off limits. You're not going to talk about Julio. You're not going to talk about Kirby or Castillo. You just signed him and probably Gilbert as well. But they're at a spot where a lot of everybody else, and probably not Cal Raleigh either, but you need to be open-minded. When a team you thought was going to be this good is not performing, I think that you have to look at it and say, rather than going for a, hey, we've got to get that one last relief piece to make this a World Series team, this team isn't close to that right now. And it's a tough thing to say, but any clear-eyed analysis, if you compare where the Texas lineup is right now to Seattle's, there's no comparison right now. There is no comparison. And oh, by the way, Houston's gotten a lot better the last month too. So this is the kind of a deadline where it's not the final piece kind of a deadline. It is take a step back. We've got issues here. And how do we fundamentally change this team, whether it's a different kind of right-left balance, whether it's a different kind of contact-oriented lineup. But this is not a team that needs an adjustment at the deadline. This one might need some really major renovations here because that Texas team is going nowhere in terms of leaving their spot atop the division. They're good this year. Look at the players in their team. They're going to be good next year too. The pitching, even without DeGrom, is really good. That element of Texas is the thing that I think is changing this entire calculus. And this team, the Mariners, they've got to confront the reality that they probably have to make some pretty significant changes to make this a much more competitive roster.
Boy, that was the one thing I mentioned that is the most, I guess the biggest thorn in my side anyway, is how the Rangers are doing.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's their year. It's their year, Dave. Apparently. And I'm not saying it's their year to win the World Series, but this is the kind of stuff that happens when it's your year. And you know what, Dave, is really, it gives you like that pang in your stomach when you think about this. Mm-hmm. What if last year was Seattle's year and that was as far as they got?
Yeah.
That's the tough part, because you never know. There's nothing written in stone that says your window opens in this year and closes in this year.
Right.
You might have your window to really do it might be a year, year and a half, 2 years. You never know. And that's why last year was such a unique season, because a lot of things lined up. And now all of a sudden you look up at Texas and say, oh, my goodness, this team is going to be here for a while.
Yeah, 154, I think, plus 154 in run differential.
Dominant.
But, yeah. Hey, you did, we had a little chat before the interview here, but you did something on MLB Network, and being down in Texas, you did a little bit of research. David Lowe, who is the father of Nathaniel, and what's the brother's name?
Josh.
Nathaniel. Pretty amazing family, right? I mean, this guy, he was drafted by the Mariners, David Lowe was, in 1986, and instead decided to attend the U.S. Naval Academy, became a naval aviator and a career fighter pilot in the U.S. Navy. The thing I got to know first, though, JP, is you teased this very well the other day. You were going to find his call sign, like Maverick or Goose or whatever. What's his call sign? What is David Lowe's call sign?
Streaker.
Streaker. Oh.
Streaker. And I love it. And the funny thing is, and this is the best part about it, So being a reporter, I had to say, okay, Lieutenant Commander Lowe, what's your call sign? And he told me it was Streaker. And then eventually I followed up and said, as a reporter, again, I have to ask you, can you tell me the story? And I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically said, I did not do what my colleagues okay. said that I did, but that was the extent of what I got in terms of the explanation. So, which makes it even better, right? It makes it even better that I don't know. But what I do know is, again, to your point, an extraordinary family and a Mariner draft pick, which makes it pretty cool. So the story he told me was he grew up in Florida, and originally he had planned to go to Vanderbilt to play both baseball and football. But obviously he was established enough and polished enough already as a high school player that the Mariners drafted him out of high school. So he had to make a choice. Basically, he had three choices. Ostensibly, he had the first two, which was go to Vanderbilt and play both, or sign with the Mariners and pursue the dream of playing professional baseball. But actually, it was door number three, which was the Naval Academy. And originally, his dream was to become an astronaut. And there was a sort of, again, another fork in the road where he had a decision. Do you go to Top Gun school or do you go to test pilot school to eventually try to become an astronaut? And he said basically because of his grades and because of the overall circumstances of the time, he opted for Top Gun. So, again, Nathaniel Lowe and Josh Lowe's dad, to put a finer point on it, is a former Mariners draft pick who went on to become a Top Gun tactics instructor, a Navy fighter pilot, a U.S. Navy fighter pilot, who served multiple combat deployments to the Middle East. I mean, decorated lieutenant commander in the United States Navy. So pretty amazing story. I was really honored to be able to speak to him. We actually spoke on Memorial Day, as it was, and just reflected on his service. And he shared a story of one of his fellow servicemen who was lost in combat. And just it was a very thoughtful, really emotional talk. And just my admiration goes out to him. And it's really cool that this weekend, the reason why it's so relevant right now is that his sons are going to play in the same Major League right. series for the first time this weekend. Right. And they just so happen to have the best two records in all of Major League Baseball. So,
is it in Texas or Tampa?
And it's in Florida where the family lives.
Ah,
so you're going to – whatever that typical average attendance is at the Trop, watch it go up by about 1,000 because the lows are going to be there in force. So it's a pretty cool story. And again, that it transcends the game. And so to Lieutenant Commander Lowe and his wife Wendy and their sons, just enjoy a pretty special weekend.
Yeah, very cool. Baseball full of cool stories like
that's
that.
Right.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah, what a loser. Yeah. I mean, he goes to Top Gun school and makes it into the – I mean, these are two things that like very, very few people do, right?
Right. So, and you're exactly right. Think about the universe of people who can ever say – he might be the only one that we've ever been aware of in this country's history that can say they've been a Major League Baseball draft pick, a Top Gun tactics instructor, and then have seen his two sons play both in Major League Baseball. I mean,
incredible.
He probably is one of one. So yeah. You're right. It's an amazing story, and again, I'm thrilled for them to have this very special weekend as a family.
Hey, JP, when an offense is struggling to find consistency like the Mariners have, do you think it puts a little more pressure on the starting pitching? I mean, we've seen some kind of uncharacteristic outings out of George Kirby in two of his last three starts, really has been hit more than we're used to seeing. Do you feel like that's internalized self-pressure, or is there something just mechanically that other teams are recognizing out of Kirby now?
It might be a little bit of both. I do think that it is taxing on a staff when they have to constantly try to find ways to win 2-1, 3-2, 3-1. Those are hard games to win. Those are hard games on your staff. And remember, of course, this is a team that's been without their initial closer for a while in Munoz. So that's the other part of this conversation. So, and Robbie Ray as well. That's another thing to kind of keep in mind for all of us. But I think I do think it's probably a combination of knowing that you've got to be darn near perfect and also the league getting to know them a little bit more. And the thing about Kirby, and it's so unique, I looked at his numbers before his most recent start. His strikeout to walk ratio, at least entering his most recent start, was not just the best in baseball. It was the best in baseball by a wide margin. It is unbelievable, his level of command. And I do think that when at some point, and obviously I'd much rather have this be the way my pitcher is than the alternative, at some point when you're in the zone that much, it might, if not consciously, subconsciously, eventually the other team says, wait a minute, he's going to be in the zone all the time. Let's just focus on that and know that at some point I'm going to get something to hit, as opposed to the pitcher who is either wild or effectively wild, however you want to call it. I think that at some point in time, his stuff is obviously great, but there might be some teams and some instances to where that does help them get a little more comfortable. But he's an amazing pitcher. I think it's more of an aberration just the last couple times out. I would take my chances with him any day. And also, we got to remember, he goes up against the Padres, who might finally be finding their form at least a little bit. So that lineup was due to break out. And they always say, as Jim Leland would always tell us years ago, it's not who you play, it's when you play them. And I think that the Mariners had the misfortune of playing the Padres right around the time their lineup finally woke up.
Hey, not to make this all about Texas, but again, it has
your new favorite team.
It's bothering me. Yeah, that's what everybody's going to tell me, that's my favorite team. But
it's relevant. It's the division. It's like you're talking about. You know, there would be some Oregon Ducks conversation on this network. There would be, because you got to be aware of the Pac-12.
Yeah, exactly. And are they the team, do you think, JP, that's most balanced as far as signing guys, you know, spending money in free agency and developing guys as well? Because, you know, they've spent a good amount of money, and I know last year it didn't really work out for them, but, you know, you got Seager and you got Simeon, and now and you got some of the, you know, like Adolis Garcia and some of the young guys that are coming up. They seem fairly balanced in that regard.
I think that's their goal. I mean, they obviously have spent a ton. I look at this as more of a team that's been built with some very specific free agent targeted moves, with obviously there's a core of guys. Martin Perez has been there for a while. He left and then came back. I think he's a really great story. I think they want to be, the Rangers do, more like the team that I think is the ultimate example of that in the game in the last decade, which is the Dodgers. That's the dream. The Dodgers are the team that everybody wants to be like. And had Gavin Lux not have been injured this season, you would have had a team with, in the Dodgers' case, four different homegrown position players. You have Will Smith, Gavin Lux, Vargas, and Outman. And then where the Dodgers get really good is their ability to leverage that massive payroll to get exactly the right guys and the right free agents or trade candidates who fit what they do, like Mookie, Freddie Freeman. That they make a later career signing of J.D. Martinez, who has a very strong relationship with their hitting coach, Robert Venskoyak. They got Muncy when he was very undervalued. Looking at their rotation, in a typical time, they would have Walker Buehler there. They've got Kershaw there. Their entire rotation actually is fully homegrown. Kershaw homegrown, Miller homegrown, Gonsolin homegrown, Urias homegrown. I mean, that's the ultimate example, in my opinion, right now. And one team that's kind of sneaky under the radar, and you know, they've sort of been up and down of late, but the Mets. I had a game in New York last week, and I think half of their lineup was homegrown guys: Alonso, McNeil, Nimmo. You know, that group, and that's significant. So I do think that is the ultimate goal too for the Mariners, to be that kind of self-sustaining team. And I think pitching wise they've done that. Kirby, Gilbert, Miller, obviously. So I think that's kind of the idea. But you're right, I think Texas has made the right decisions at the right time to try to finish off their club, but certainly a lot of money's been spent there. Seager, Semien, and then the pitching staff. And a final point to make on Texas: I am sort of in a big picture happy for them that they have recovered from the absolute gut punch of 2020, new ballpark, and you can't have any fans. Mm-hmm. So that was usually, you expect when you open up a new stadium, there's a lot of excitement. The ballpark's going to sell itself for a year. They didn't have that. And I think that it's taken them a while to recover from that, but I'm happy from a overall baseball standpoint that ballpark is full, because it is a great ballpark, and it's maybe not quite as special as one that's hosting the All-Star game this year, but it is a pretty good ballpark.
Well, JP, before we let you go, that leads me right into my final question for you. How many Mariners do you think make the All-Star game?
You know, that's a great question. I think that there's always that hometown bump, and it's maybe not quite the same as when I was reminiscing recently about the old paper ballots and what that was like. You had to, you know, punch out the paper ballot and what you did there. I think Kelenic, based on the way he started the year, I would expect he gets a really strong boost. And part of it, too, is MLB will help with input about how the rosters come together. You know, J-Rod was such a – he was one of the faces of the game a year ago in terms of the All-Star game itself, the Derby. I really hope that he's there, even though maybe the numbers haven't been for the full season as great as you would expect for him. I think he is one of the stars of the game. So Julio, I think, needs to be there. I think Kelenic's numbers overall, I think, potentially could put him in that conversation, but there's a lot of outfielders that are really good. Cal Raleigh might be a really good fit behind the plate. And I think on the pitching side, Kirby belongs for me. I think pretty strongly that he belongs there. So I would say at least three with that hometown bump. Mm-hmm. There's always a snub or two that don't get in, and you think they belong, like France. It took them right to the last minute last year. But I really believe that J-Rod, even though, you know, April wasn't what we expected, he's still one of the faces of baseball and belongs there at that All-Star game.
Yeah, great stuff, John. We always appreciate it. Always fun talking to you, and it's a fantastic insight. So thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. All the best. We got Game 3 of the Cup Final tonight as well, so yeah, we'll see if
we have it.
We'll
on
see
right
if
now.
We've got a series. That Vegas has been so good, so good. So we'll see how things go here going forward.
Yeah.
Thanks, JP.
All the best, guys. Thank you.
All right. That is MLB Network's John Morosi. And if you missed anything from our conversation with JP or anything from our show, you can go to our podcast page at seattlesports.com. Click on our picture, a picture of Dave and Bob. Hit subscribe to make sure you never miss a thing. And then check out everything out there while you're there at seattlesports.com. You can go right to our page if you want to see Bob's baseball breakdown or Wyman's football 101s or everything we've been up to lately. You can go to seattlesports.com/Bob or seattlesports.com/Wyman. Well, coming up, we're going to go take a quick look around the NFL, and another NFL player is in trouble for betting on games. Don't know if this is turning into a pretty problematic scene for the league, but we'll dig into that. Coming up next, this is Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Always some great stuff with John Morosi. Wonderful insight there into, well, Navy SEALs, baseball world, everything else. Dave, we didn't even ask him about hockey. We could have. Stanley Cup's on. Game 3 right now. But there's a lot going on around the NFL. Already, we've talked about this earlier, 5 players were suspended earlier in this offseason for gambling on games. And then the NFL is now investigating Colts cornerback Isaiah Rodgers because he placed hundreds of bets on Colts games and on other things they've found this season. How widespread do you think this is going to be? Is this going to be a concern because of how easy it is now in the league, how prevalent it is, and guys, just current players, getting in trouble like this?
I don't know how they are doing it. So I'm going to go old school on you, Mike. Back in the day, people had bookies or a guy who knew a guy, right? So if you know a guy that has an account or whatever, mm-hmm. and you talk to him, and that's a good friend of yours, and you don't go and put your credit. I mean, how are they getting these guys' names, do you think? I mean, how are they catching him? Do you think it's like a credit card or something?
Yeah,
or
I think because
they're leaving some kind of trail,
yeah.
Right? And I guess I'm not here to to tell everybody how to get away with it, but I just think you have to be pretty dumb to get caught. I mean, why don't you do it through a friend or a brother or whatever? I mean, how are these guys getting caught?
Well, my question
must be very obvious.
My question too: aren't they warned? I mean, don't you have they have the rookie symposiums? They have the things they have to go to. Isn't this hammered in right away about do not gamble when you're an athlete in the sport? Or
it's entirely.
You're gonna get banned?
It's entirely. Yeah, I mean, look, when we went to London a few years ago, they have these offsite betting places where you can go and place bets and everything. And I think I remember hearing somebody talk about it, and I don't know if it was Dave Pearson, who's the vice president or whatever. They're like, no, just don't even, we don't want to even talk about it. We don't want to hear anything about it, like the whole gambling thing. And that's why when they you know, legalized some of the gambling, and then you got a team in Las Vegas. I was very shocked by that because every year, a guy named Charlie Jackson, who was a former player, would come in and talk about gambling. I mean, he would talk about drugs being associated with certain people. I mean, all the pitfalls that will get you as a professional player. But the one that was pounded in the most was gambling. And it was just like, you don't even talk about it. And that's like, I don't know if you have heard, like, some of these people that have been fined for having their phone on down on the field.
Right. That's a big deal, too.
Yeah. So, and, you know, I don't know if it's a... if just a scare tactic or whatever, but O'Connell was telling me one time, because I was down there, I think, texting somebody, you know, and it was way before the game. But, you know, he was telling me that there was some, it wasn't like a vice president or something, but it was like, you know, one of the guys, like, say, NASA or whatever, that, you know, works on the media staff, and that he was texting somebody or had his phone out and got fined like $25,000.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's a huge deal. And so, you know, so number one, I guess I'm equally shocked by the fact that, number one, the guy got caught. I don't know why he would do it that way. And it's not like I have all these ways to not get caught. I'm just saying, you know, back in the old days, you had a guy that knew somebody that knew somebody.
This is going to turn into Dave Wyman's advice on how to not get caught.
How
to gamble without getting caught. No, we're not. Right. We are not condoning that at all. But you're right.
But it's off
book. Then, you know, if you have no digital trail,
right,
it's a lot tougher. But now the fact that so many people have gotten caught, it becomes the question of, all right, there is that inkling in the back of people's mind if a suspicious call happens. I mean, we talked about this last year,
right,
with conspiracy theories down the stretch and the NFL scheduling game times, or you know, if bad calls happen in a row in a late game situation, there's that shred of doubt. There's
exactly
that logical seed planted when you hear things like this. Oh, current players have gambled on games. They've been caught. Now if something suspicious happens, that's always going to be that seed of doubt planted in everyone's mind. And I think that is so much worse for the league than just one minor player, maybe even betting on his team to win. That's where it becomes a huge issue. If there is evidence that games are being thrown or being fixed, and the whole thing just completely loses its credibility.
Yeah, and so like the officials in the NBA, remember there was that deal. But, you know, look, how many times do you see a guy, he's wide open. It's the Steelers versus the Cowboys, and it was in like the 70s where there was a tight end that was thrown a ball right in his hands.
No, the Super Bowl. Right?
It was in a Super Bowl game.
It's on his chest.
Yes, and just went right off of him. And, you know, and so you see that, and that stuff happens. But now, all of a sudden, as you put it, would you say a shade of doubt or
shred of doubt?
A shred of doubt is in somebody's mind.
Anything. You know, whatever small inkling you want to put in there.
Yeah, then, you know, if that's in there, then everybody's going to think, oh, he threw the game. Right. So, I mean, that's where I think the NFL needs to really crack down on these guys, because, you know, that's one thing that it's just been kind of the culture of the NFL and the shield, that they don't, you know, they don't want anything to do with gambling, because that's the one thing. If you thought everything was fixed, you know, I remember, you ever hear a Hi-Li, the game Hi-Li?
Where they sling the oranges.
Yeah, they've got the huge, whatever the basket is or something. And, you know, I remember going to that at the MGM, which was in Reno, and you could go and watch it if you were underage, but you could also bet on it if you were over 21. And every one of those just seemed so fixed, you know, like you'd get odds on one of the players, and then he would, you know, just kick butt and all of a sudden just drop this super easy one, you know, that, and it was like, ah, this is fixed. I mean, if you get that attitude at all, if that, like you said, even creeps in just a little tiny shred of it, it's going to be terrible. And especially, you know, you look at NBA with the officials, that's another thing. And then, you know, what about the NFL officials? I mean, they do have replay and everything like that, but, you know, if somebody thinks they're on the take, or they stand to make a lot of money because of a call that goes or doesn't get called or whatever, it'll be bad for the NFL. So I think that you're going to see some pretty harsh punishments.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the year suspension for Calvin Ridley, and now he's back, and he's on the Jags now. So it's becoming a little bit concerning that it's this widespread. So 6 players now have been kind of caught for gambling things this offseason. Meanwhile, another big story in the league, So the Bills just broke ground on a new stadium. The Titans announced plans for a new stadium. And yesterday, the Jaguars came out with this massive unveiling of renovations they're doing to their stadium. And all of a sudden, it seems like that's the new arms race. You know, every 15 to 20 years, you have to have a new stadium. I got to wondering, Dave, Lumen Field's a great building. It is a great stadium, but it's 20 years old. I mean, it is going into its third decade. How long until the Seahawks think, okay, we need some improvements. We need to really gut it, change it up a little bit. And I mean, I think you're going to see this around the league. Every stadium, as they get near 30 years old.
The duration, 20?
No, I mean, it's what, 21 years old?
No, I'm saying, is that going to be the standard now? Yeah. If it's there for 20 years, we got to replace
maybe,
it.
Because, yeah, July 28th, 2022. So, you know, just slightly over 20 years old, but not the oldest stadium in Tennessee, not the oldest stadium in Jacksonville, already getting completely redone. So
what's
I wonder.
What's that stadium like there in the Titans?
It's all right. It's very replaceable. I mean, they get so many opposing fans in there. Seahawks will flood it in December because it's Nashville. It's a tourist destination. It's a great place to go to. So it's not anything special, but the Titans specifically, they want a Super Bowl. So they're building one with a roof. Same thing with the Jaguars. They don't need a roof to have a Super Bowl. They've had a Super Bowl there. They're putting a roof on theirs. The Bears are coming out with plans for a stadium. The Bills, we talked about this on Tuesday, they're not putting a roof on there, so they'll never get a Super Bowl, but they are completely gutting and building a new stadium. And it just feels like every single team now, I mean, who has an old stadium left? Everyone's got a pretty new stadium nowadays.
Green Bay.
Yeah, Green Bay and like Kansas City, but those are so unique in their own right.
Yeah, Kansas City is not a great stadium.
No, it's old. It's very old. They've kind of talked about trying to tinker around with it.
But I think that Lumen Field is so... It's still so modern, and I feel like if anything, that they'll, you know, just kind of refurbish some of the lounges and things like that. But for the most part,
they made some upgrades last year too. So I'm not saying that it's going to be a vast rehaul, or, you know, renovation anytime soon. But it's funny to see every offseason at least one or two NFL teams announce plans for new stadiums.
It's just weird that I went to opening day at Lumen. It was the Cardinals, 2002, is that right? Anyway, and I just like, it was this brand new, and we were walking around looking at everything. You know, there's the high school football helmet wall, and then, you know, you have a bunch of, old players, you know, from the past, and just walking around thinking, wow, this is just the coolest. And now here we are talking about possibly replacing it.
Did you sneak your helmet in there? Like, hey, you need some more Wooster High apparel.
It was only the state of Washington, surprisingly,
Mike. Well, you could have snuck it in and seen if anyone would have noticed. Like, oh, that's
one helmet I don't have. I don't have Wooster High.
You don't have
helmet.
Why don't you have a high school?
Well, because in high school, they don't give you your helmet. That's
a good point.
It's expensive. You can't just let everybody. We're talking
a lot
about
of players that come through.
We'll talk about that tomorrow with Sam Atkins that, you know, like these guys replace or swap jerseys and everything. I had a jersey that was like sewn up like 10 different times because I only had one, and that, you know, they would bring it in there, get the sewing machine on it. So, yeah, they don't just give those away in high school.
Okay. Well, maybe they should for you. We'll figure that out. All right. We're going to get back to the Mariners, talk about our confidence level heading into the weekend series against the Angels. Might not be high, but we'll figure out where it is when we come back. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and SeattleSports.com.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
The Mariners are off today. They begin a series in Anaheim tomorrow night. Luis Castillo, Shohei Ohtani. Man, it's going to be a heck of a pitching matchup. But it also brings up a very common complaint. And it'll be perfect for tomorrow for What's Buggin' Bob. Now sponsored, by the way, Dave. How about that?
Yeah.
What's Buggin' Bob?
All we've done is just complain and whine.
We've
about
done
things.
It so well that Issaquah Pest Control is going to sponsor What's Buggin' Bob. It's
I like
the perfect
that it's
sponsor.
Pest control.
Yeah, it's the perfect Buggin'. Marriage.
Yes. There
so
you go.
That brings up a complaint. It's on Apple TV tomorrow. But before the Mariners do begin that series, they're sitting here trying to make up ground. You know, they're right in the mix of all these wildcard teams, but they're significantly back of the Rangers and the Astros. And at this point, you kind of thought the Mariners would be where at least the Astros were. I don't know if you would have expected a 40 mark right now where the Rangers are, because they have been just incredible. But at least where the Astros are, the Astros right now 36-26, that was a fair expectation for the Mariners. So to see them at 30-31, it's surprising. But where's your confidence level? Are you out on this season? Are you cautiously optimistic? Or somewhere along that range, how are you feeling?
Well, what were we thinking last year at this time? I mean, what was my number again? It was last year at this time, they were 27-34. I mean, that's pretty bad after 61 games. Mm-hmm. You're 30-31 right now. And look, your young pitching has had blow-ups here and there. Your bats haven't gotten going, and I don't remember them being hot last year at this time. Are they better? I mean, is Teoscar Hernandez better than Mitch Haniger? I mean, Mitch was so unpredictable, you know. So I don't know. I'm fine with it. I'm not. It's not like I'm okay with them being at 30-31. I thought that they were going to be a little bit better, but based on what they did last year compared to this year, they're better. They're 30-31 instead of 27-34. So, yeah, I'm okay with it. I feel like that it's going to come around. You're going to start getting timely hits. You're going to start getting extra base hits. You're going to start getting hits with runners in scoring position, not stranding as many. And that it, you know, with their pitching, if they can stay healthy, you know, and that it really brought it home the other day when, like we talked about, it was almost like a perfect Mariner game where, you know, you got a home run from Julio and from Teoscar. You got seven innings from Logan Gilbert, and then you bring in
Munoz, and then Sewald,
and just the way that whole thing played out, it was like every successful game they had last year went exactly like that. So, you know, I feel like they're going to start to get more of that. I feel like Gino is going to start to heat up a little bit. He hasn't been hitting the ball as hard as we're used to. You, like I mentioned, you've already gotten what you really would have taken in a minute from Kelnick. If you'd have said, hey, he's going to be third on on-base percentage, have 10 home runs at this point, which is second on the team, what do you think? I mean, because he's a plus defender, got a great arm, all of that. So you got that, and then you have JP hitting the ball and getting on base. So isn't he the on-base percentage leader for shortstops? And
AL shortstops.
AL. Yeah.
I don't think MLB.
No.
But AL shortstops, American best walk rate, best on-base percentage. So yeah. There are some good shortstops in the American League. Bo Bichette, Wander Franco. So Crawford has done everything you've needed in that leadoff spot.
Yeah.
And he's been the surprising staple of the leadoff spot because the plan was Julio. And Julio was the guy that was supposed to be the leadoff hitter. They wanted their best hitter up there. Didn't work out. Slumping to find consistency. J.P. Crawford moves up there. He has locked that down. That's the one area right now the Mariners can lean their hat on. I know it's hang your hat on. That's the one area that they can hang their hat on is that J.P. Crawford has turned out to be a phenomenal leadoff hitter. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be what you can rely on. You got to build around that.
So what about you? How do you feel?
I think
compared to last year, come on, they're better.
No, I don't know that because there are better teams around them. So last year, what they were doing, even when they were struggling, they were beating good teams. They won series against good teams. They weren't beating the bad teams, strangely enough. And then they had that huge slump where they weren't really beating anyone. But to this point, they haven't beaten a good team. Then they haven't shown the consistency on offense. And now the good thing is it can change. It can change at any minute. And we thought that was Tuesday, and it can still happen. So I would put myself in the, yeah, all right, not feeling great, but cautiously optimistic that something can turn and then it will click. The issue is, and why you kind of lean to the negative side, is that it hasn't clicked long term yet. Even when you put together, you know, 4 or 5 game win streaks, then it regresses and you get back down and you fall around 500. So they have just hung around 500 and not been able to maintain that leverage a few spots above 500.
Here's what I like, Mike, and maybe I lean on this a little bit too heavily, but it's one thing when you're, you know, here in town listening to analysts, but when you're listening to national analysts, and especially, you know, guys like Brian Kenny and Mark DeRosa and, you know, Jihadi, you know, whoever it is at MLB Central, you know, the show in the mornings, they all like the way the Mariners are built. They're like, I think this is a team that's going to go, they say positive things because of their pitching and, you know, that they have superstars. Like, a lot of talk about Jared Kelnick now, all of a sudden sort of entering that arena. And then also you got Julio, of course. And so, I mean, I feel like that everybody's panicking just a little bit right now. And I think Jerry was trying to calm everybody down by saying, look, you know, earlier we had those clips from DePoto that there's not one guy that's going to come in and save this team, not even Babe Ruth. So I would have said Ohtani if I was him.
He should have stayed up with the times, right?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, I think he's just trying to calm everybody down right now because – but you're right. I mean, I wish that they would have, you know, had won the series against the Yankees. I want to see them start to be more competitive with Texas. Did we lose the first series from that with them too?
Lost two out of three.
They've won one out of six, you know, or they're 1-5.
Yes.
I should say 1-5 against the Rangers right now. So that part does discourage me a little bit.
And it's funny is that they've beaten the Astros.
Yeah,
the Astros, who have been so difficult and were such a menace last year in the second half of the season, one of those good series wins the Mariners have is against the Astros. So you have that. You don't have a lot of consistency, though. But again, it's baseball. It can turn at any minute. Come away with a series win against the Angels. And if you come back and take advantage of two lesser teams in the Marlins and the White Sox, you have to stack the wins at this point, Dave. They're stacking wins. You have to stack wins at some point, and maybe this is the stretch. We haven't seen it yet, but
Then afterwards, Mike, we can unpack everything. That's another word.
We can unpack the stacking.
Yes.
They stack and then unpack. We have found the formula to a successful season. First you stack, then you unpack those wins. That'll do it for our show today. Big thanks to everyone who was involved in the program. And if you missed any of it, you can always go to our website at seattlesports.com. Click on the Wyman and Bob picture. Everything you missed is there. Our podcasts, our interviews, everything is right there. You can always click subscribe, and then you never miss it. It always comes right to your listening device. That'll do it for our show today. We'll be back tomorrow. Talk to you then.